The reading for tonight is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. Now, as they went on their way, he entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks, so she came to him and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." The word of the Lord.
If I were to show you a picture of Dr. David Olaf Pinsky, you would see that his hair is parted straight down the middle, with growth around the top and cut short on the sides and the back. In fact, if I were to show you a photo taken of Dr. David Olaf Pinsky from 1954, 1977, 1983 or 2001, you would see that whatever the era, he eschewed the current fashion in favor of that most unusual hairstyle. Furthermore, if you were to see pictures of the other members of his research team, both male and female, you would see that they all, no matter the cuts that there is peer appropriate to the period, be it beehive or pompadour or crew cut or pixie, bob, full fro, tight fade, slicked back, the dry look, mullet, bangs, bowl, or bieber, they eschewed them all and wore the same exact haircut as Dr. David Olaf Pinsky. The adoption of the full Pinsky dates back to the beginning of his work. He had a dream. This was when he was just a young man, just starting to explore the ideas that would become his life's work. In this dream, he was standing over a man who was seated in a chair, and he was looking down at the top of his head, much as a barber would stand looking down onto the head of, let's say, a customer. And in the dream, Dr. David Olaf Pinsky places his hands on either side of the, let's say, subject's head, holding it in place while he bent over, placing his right eye right up on top of the, let's say, victim's head, and pushed that eye with such a great force that his eye pushed through the skull and was able to see inside the subject's brain. When Pinsky woke the next morning, the dream came back to him immediately and clearly, and he leaped out of bed and drew a picture of what he had seen. He arranged a meeting with an old school friend of his, who Pinsky described as probably the smartest guy I know. No, he is the smartest guy. He thinks real good. And after they had gotten comfortable at their meeting place and ordered some oolong, Pinsky put that drawing on the table between them and declared, "I have, through purely non-scientific methods, been able to create a picture of what the actual human brain looks like for the first time ever." His friend, who never liked Pinsky, nevertheless, he tried to act kindly to him, explained that not only have there been countless images of actual human brains, there are even countless actual human brains available for study. And furthermore, the picture Pinsky drew does not in any way resemble a human brain. What about the part down the middle? Eh, said the smart guy. What about the two roundy halves? The smart man said again. But, Pinsky implored, this drawing was made by using purely non-scientific methods. Yes, the friend gave him. That is why it is. That's why it's what? Pinsky interjected passionately. That is why it's inaccurate. He was not at all dissuaded. Pinsky stood up from that meeting and shook the hand of his old friend and headed straight to the nearest barber shop, where he handed Floyd the drawing and said, cut it like this. Cut it exactly like this. As time went by, year after year, Pinsky developed his thoughts and produced pamphlets and tracts explaining his work, which he called non-scientific brain research. In his first publication of the Journal of Non-Scientific Brain Research, he dedicated most of its pages to an article entitled The Cognitive Benefits of Wearing Your True Brain Shape on the Outside of Your Head. His ideas progressed beyond brain-shaped haircuts, and that was finally what led him to his, that was his foundation, that was just the beginning. He first found real notice with a publication of the non-scientific understanding of the self, or using your two different brain halves to understand who you are and how to change it. After its fourth printing, he was invited to establish the Institute for Non-Scientific Brain Research at the Fort Monroe Community College in the glorious mountain region of western Nebraska. In the Middle Ages, in the Middle East, even today, hospitality is taken very seriously. And in first century Palestine, there were all sorts of customs and expectations when you invited someone into your home. In the reading for tonight, Jesus is continuing on his way. He and his disciples are heading to Jerusalem, and they enter a certain village. They encounter a woman named Martha, and Martha welcomed Jesus into her home. I mean, maybe that it was just a really small village, so it was probably obvious when a stranger entered. And maybe Martha is a woman of some prestige in the village. Maybe her family are the biggest landholders in the area, or have been the elders of the village for generations. I don't know. And I don't know where the men are. Maybe the father and the brother and the uncles are dead, or traveling, or working. But for whatever reason, it is Martha who meets these travelers and this stranger and welcomes Jesus to the village and shows proper hospitality by welcoming Jesus into her family home. Then we learn that Mary has a sister, and that the sister sits at Jesus' feet and listens to what he said. Meanwhile, Martha is doing what is required to show hospitality, preparing food, preparing the room, whatever is required, whatever is proper. This is what is done when someone is welcomed into your home. This is the routine. This is well known to all. This is the routine. It's well known to the guests as well as the host. Certain things must be done. And, well, from here on out, you know this story. You know how it goes, right? You know how the whole thing, you know, the whole thing usually at this point gets turned into some 50s uptight old maid in an apron and orthopedic shoes complaining about how nobody ever helps her around the house and how she has to do all the laundry and vacuuming and cleaning the bathroom and shopping and making dinner all by herself, while her free-spirited younger sister just sits there cross-legged in her fringe macrame poncho and bell-bottoms, digging what Jesus is laying down. And Martha complains to Jesus about the situation, then Jesus, probably sitting cross-legged too, probably wearing like a fringe suede vest, unconsciously sweeps a bit of his long hair parted down the middle back behind his ear, and he tells Martha to just, like, chill. Like, Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by so many things, but there is only one thing, and Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken from her. Dig? But we don't know. We don't know if Martha did dig, because that is the end of the story. We don't know exactly what the better part that will not be taken away from Mary is. Is it the content of what Jesus is saying? Is that the better part? Is it that she has chosen to stop and listen? And is the implication that something will be taken away from Martha? Like her eternal salvation, or just because she was being a good host? Because she was following the routine dictated by the rules and cultural expectations, hospitality? Then there's this kind of vibe that always comes in that Martha's kind of like dumb. She's kind of like stupid for wasting her life caring about the mundane, the everyday, the routine. We need the mundane, everyday routine. It's what makes our lives work. It is how we are built. We need order. We can't all buy an old Volvo station wagon and follow fish around. I don't like this whole reading. I don't like all this, you know, like Jesus here, and he's just rejecting this routine, and really, Mary is the right way to go. Because Jesus, he can't just say that this routine is something that should be rejected, because he is on himself on the way to Jerusalem for the Passover. This is the routine every year. And in the next verses, the disciples ask him how we pray. And Jesus doesn't say, hey man, just freestyle it. Pray for whatever or to whoever. I don't want to be all, you know, limiting your thing. No, he teaches them the Lord's Prayer. He says, when you pray, say this. He gives them the prayer routine. I don't like this whole oppositional interpretation. Mary good, Martha bad. This physical labor, bad. Sitting and learning, good. I want something different. I don't like the interpretation. It makes no sense to me. I want something that doesn't require anyone to be the bad guy. I mean, gal. Luckily for me, I found this obscure scholar who claimed that actually, science can obscure our understanding of our true selves. His name is Dr. David Olaf Pinsky, and he writes that through non-scientific brain research, he has determined that the human brain is the soul, or the psyche, or the you part of you. And that you part of you is divided. Divided into two roundy pieces with a part down the middle. And one part is what he calls the routine brain. And that's the part that helps you get up in the morning and go to bed at night and helps you to keep going and teaches you how to study and to work and to how to get food and how to form governments and how to make systems so people can make life work. It's necessary. And the other roundy part, Pinsky says, is a part of the brain he calls the interruption brain. And Pinsky says that without the interruption brain, nothing can change. Everything remains routine. We can't ever learn or grow. If we just let the routine brain go forward, we can survive. But we won't be alive. No, we need that time. We need that interruption brain. We need it to help us. Because the interruption brain does things. It interrupts that routine brain so that we can not only be able to make families and societies, but also so that we can grow and change and do all kinds of good things that only happen when our lives are interrupted. The interruption brain gives us the ability to be struck by something beautiful. It gives us love and sex and beauty and the ability to hear a song and stop, to be in that non-reflexive now. The interruption brain strikes us with sorrow and grief when we lose someone we love, so that we don't move on too soon, but that we stop and we live in the interruption. We live in that moment as long as it takes. It strikes us with compassion for others. So when we see injustice, it interrupts us so we can consider the situation. It brings an end to routines that aren't working. It makes it possible for change. It makes it possible to love. You need both, Pinsky says. And actually, he uses this story of Martha and Mary to illustrate it, among other ancient myths and Pink Floyd lyrics. Pinsky says that the story isn't about two separate people in opposition, but it's just one. That the house that Jesus is welcomed into is the total you. And that Martha is the routine brain, and that Mary is the interruption brain, and that there are certain times in your life when you need to have your life interrupted, even if our routine brain tells us it would be easier to just keep moving forward with the way things are. Sometimes, and more often than most people will allow, we need to be interrupted, to be stopped, to feel, to understand. We need to understand, we need to consider, and maybe be reoriented. I've never felt more than I feel right now, that this is the time for not just me to be interrupted, but something like all of you, something like this whole city, something like humanity needs to be interrupted, because the routine doesn't seem like it's working for us. So I pray that we will all be open to this interruption and live there for a while yet.